Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Big Ten Sports Illustrated writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing all right, Jim. I'm still in a little bit of basketball mode as we wind down the Final Four, but that's okay. That's okay. This is still a fun time of year.
It is. It's a great time of year. You've got the Final Four coming up, college hoops, March Madness. You and I are both baseball guys. We had opening day going on. By the way, I haven't been following. How are your Braves doing?
Yeah, so I had a donut for breakfast, and that resembled the number of wins that they have through the first five games of the season. It's been ugly, ugly, and a suspension already, an 80-game suspension. So how about that?
Well, I fibbed a little bit. I have been following. I did notice it, and I wrote down a couple of notes about your Braves. 0-5. One run in their last three games, just put a starter on the injured list, have a PED suspension for their biggest free agent acquisition of the offseason. The only thing I will say, and I'm saying this as a New York Mets fan, Mets started last year 0-5, just like your Braves did, and they still made the playoffs, made it to the National League Championship Series, so there's still hope.
There's still – no, I'm ready to cash it. 162-game season, I'm ready to cash it in after five games. I am, however, I developed a new – not developed. I found a new game, though, on the MLB app, which is Beat the Streak.
Okay.
Probably a lot of people listening to this. It's like – so it's Joe DiMaggio's hit streak, so a 56-game hit streak. If you pick the right hitter, 56 – if you pick a guy who gets a hit – 56 times in a row, you win this massive amount of money. My streak's up to 5. That's the good news in baseball for me. Only 51 to go.
You're on your way. You're like I'm almost on my there. Way.
I'm almost to retirement. I can feel it now.
Almost 10% of the way. So how about I'll at least call it a more positive note in the Dustin Schutte sports world. As listeners of our show know, you're a Purdue guy. You were able to follow Purdue. Sweet 16 appearance. Real tough loss to a number one seed, Houston. I did want to ask you about that game, the end of the game. There was a potential offensive foul that was not called. You were in the arena, right?
Yep.
I just wanted to get your take on it.
So what's funny is, so where that play happened, I probably could not have really been further away from it. So that was on the other end of the floor. I'm on the court side, direct, basically under the hoop.
Okay.
So when I first saw the play and I saw Braden Smith go to the ground, Milo Suzan, and I saw his arm extend, I thought, oh, that's an offensive foul. There was no whistle. So sometimes we don't always get the best replays in those arenas. And sometimes, like, depending on where I'm sitting, the view isn't the best. So I was like, maybe he didn't make contact. Maybe it was just kind of a swooping arm motion. So I put it out on Twitter, like, was that an offensive foul? And I didn't just get responses from Purdue fans. I got clips. I got videos. I think that was a pretty clear foul. And to me, I don't know where a lot of people stand on this. I'm kind of the person that if it's a foul in the first 30 seconds, it's a foul in the last 30 seconds. Like, I don't – like, that's just my philosophy of it. And what is kind of funny is, like, the officials made some really bad calls at the stretch or at down the pivotal stretch that went against Purdue. But I thought, by and large, like, for 38 minutes of that game, the officiating was pretty good. So I think if you spattered those four bad calls out throughout the game, nobody is talking about it. But because they happen bang, 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 and then you have that devastating way to lose, I think that's what agitated a lot of people. But the bottom line is they were like a lot of people thought Houston would win that game by 12 to 15 points, and Purdue had a shot to win it, take it to overtime at least against a team that I think may win the national championship. So they're in the Final Four. So it was a heartbreaking way to lose, but I think when you take a step back, it was a net positive for the way that team kind of scratched and clawed and fought one of the best defensive teams in the country. If probably the best defensive team in the country.
You know, you mentioned the a foul is a foul in the first minute, in the 40th minute. It should all be called the same. I officiated basketball, obviously not at that level, but I've officiated basketball. And I feel like I would lose this debate, but I officiated the game differently at the start of the game than at the end. With the, I know it's the old saying, the official doesn't want to decide a game. My rule of thumb always was, did the foul affect the game? You know, if there's contact that I would call in the first minute, but in the last minute, it's like, I'll call it incidental. It didn't change the shot, didn't affect the shot. I'm reluctant to blow the whistle. Now, with that said, there are certain indicators for an offensive foul. The extended arm being that the one. And I think that's what makes this, I'll call it a bad non-call because of the extended arm. So with that said, though, there was only, what, like 2 seconds left. And
yep.
The player missed the shot. Ball yep. goes out of bounds. It's still Houston's ball under the basket. And the Purdue defense broke the cardinal rule. They completely forgot about the guy who inbounds the pass.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the big story. Like, and that's what a lot of us were saying after the game too. Like I asked Matt Painter about it, said he didn't see it live. So that's what he told me. I'm sure he probably had other thoughts, but didn't want to get fined. But that was the bottom line. Like he missed the shot. So if you grab a rebound, it's a null and void point. There was a lot of explanation as to what happened on that final inbounds play, but you're right. If you don't give them an easy layup, we're not talking about it. I mean, if you grab four or five rebounds throughout the course of the game, we're probably not talking about it. Houston is the real deal. Purdue could not grab a rebound. Like, I think Houston had a lot to say about that. I don't think that was just Purdue not rebounding. I think Houston's a really good rebounding team and a really good defensive team. So there's a lot of different factors that went into that. So I think in the heat of the moment, a lot of fans were like, this is a terrible call. I think it was a bad call, but you can point to a lot of other reasons why they lost that game too.
Well, and I think you hit the point where after the missed call, but we'll both call it that way, they missed a shot. Hey, just get the defensive rebound.
Yep.
And again, we're not talking about it. Then on the inbounds pass, you can't just completely abandon the guy inbounding the pass. I mean, that is, I think almost every coach on that final huddle in talking about it will say, now, to that kid's defense who abandoned it, it looked like he abandoned him for somebody else that was open under the hoop. So, yeah. But so, you know, you could trail it that way. I didn't mean to get off so long on basketball, but as long as we're down this path, Dustin, it's interesting. I did want to ask, all four number one seeds have made it to the final four. I've had people say, oh, this is it's because of the transfer portal, NIL, the rich get richer. What's your take? Anomaly or is there something to it?
I think it's probably an anomaly. And it's just so hard to say. We've got 1 year sample size. Like we're coming 2 years off of a 16 seed beating a one seed. Last year, I think Yale beat Auburn in the first round. You had a lot of – I think Kansas may have lost in the first round like 2 years ago. Like there's a lot of – there's been a lot of upsets recently. And I think that this is just one of those years where the very best teams in college basketball were the best. And let's not forget, like, we wouldn't have had a ton, but we are a Derek Queen – buzzer beater away from having a 12 seed in the Sweet 16. Like Colorado State was winning that game. If that shot's off the mark, Colorado State's in the Sweet 16. And maybe we're still having this discussion. I don't know, but it happened in 2008. I think this was just one of those years where the bracket worked out perfectly. I think I don't know. It just seemed like all season long that you kind of knew who the best 6 to 10 teams in college basketball were for the most part. And I think it just, played out that way. So I'm excited. I think this does set up like a really exciting, somebody said, you know, college basketball is the only sport where when we get the best teams to play for a championship, it's the only time people complain about it. And I think that there's some truth to that, because the beauty of March Madness is the upsets or the little guys, the Cinderella stories. So, but I think if you look at this from a basketball perspective, this should be a really, really entertaining Final Four. I think all four of those teams are really good and it should be a lot of fun. So maybe it's trending towards that direction because of NIL and because of the transfer portal. But I'm reluctant to say that after just 1 year. It could just, like, once every 15, 20 years, you're going to have some just dominant teams that they're the best, and you're not going to have a very strong mid-major group.
Well, I do think that these are the best teams. And, you know, it's interesting you said about people complain because the best teams are there. I think actually this is what more people want, because I think they like the upsets early.
Yes.
But in the end, you know, if a team, you know, a Colorado State advances to the Sweet 16, then gets crushed by Duke,
yep,
nobody's happy. So now I think, and I do believe, I had Duke and Florida as my final two teams, with Duke winning, because in watching those two teams, I just think they're really, but as you mentioned, Houston is really, really good. I haven't seen enough of Auburn, but they were the number one team in the country for a good portion of the season. And as far as the NIL, I'm not sure. I think it's just an anomaly this year. But I would be intrigued, though, if Duke comes up with the money, or any of these other teams, to keep their team together.
Yeah.
Could you imagine this Duke team with another year under their belt, these freshmen? And it's not just Cooper Flagg.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some really talented guys all around. So yeah, that would be interesting. But I think the other thing that people forget about this is, so yeah, you have maybe some of the best mid-major players going up and transferring, but you've also got some solid Power Five players that are transferring down to mid-majors, maybe for a starting role or you know, whatever the case might be, more playing time. I think, to me, it's almost kind of a wash. I don't know. I still think like team chemistry goes a big way too. So we'll see what happens in the future with this.
Yes, I think there's more to play out. 1 year, I'm not going to go crazy about it. All right, that's it for quarter number one in basketball. Quarter two, we'll switch over to football. Stay tuned. Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? GoPSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out GoPSURV.com or call 800-519-8467.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We spent quarter number one talking basketball. It was a nice change, Dustin. I appreciate it, but let's get back to football. And I want to get your take on something that's going on. All of a sudden, before our very eyes, spring football is changing. You know, this is one of the great traditions in college football. Football fans look forward to this all winter, waiting for their team to have their annual spring scrimmage. And all of a sudden, these coaches are going crazy and saying, oh, we can't have spring games because people are pilfering our players. Now that you kind of got my biased point of view on this, right, I was curious to hear what you thought.
Yeah. So I think that that's a beard. I think that idea that there's going to be tampering in that way is probably not the real reason. I think it more has – I don't know – what all it has to deal with, probably player health, maybe not putting certain plays or schemes or whatever in public. I don't know. But it seems like everybody's going this way. And it's the way bit. So I'm going to say this from the Purdue perspective, because this is what I know. This is what I follow. So I know Matt Rhule was the first one to kind of talk about this. But Barry Odom basically said, look, we can do a spring game, and Purdue has traditionally done a spring game, but we want to do this into a spring showcase that'll have scrimmage elements to it. And the reason being is he's got a very rigid, for lack of a better term, like practice plan outline of what he wants to do. And in order to hit those repetition numbers, they have to have basically a spring scrimmage. So they want to give everybody equal reps, give everybody. Now, this may be also the fact that you're taking over a team that had nothing, right? So you've got to give everybody equal opportunity to win their starting job. He's very set on getting X amount of reps in. And I don't know if that's the case for a lot of other places. I don't know if other schools have had to deal with injury. I don't know if it's just too much to deal with. Like, I think there's a lot of different variables. I think the poaching thing is just the easy way to say we don't want to do it. And I think people would, I don't want to say flock, but I think people would understand that versus just saying, we just don't want to do a spring game. We'll do something else, but we just don't want to have an actual scrimmage or a game. That's my thought on what that is.
My problem with it is this thought about tampering is, you know, you have star players. Are you going to say Bryce Underwood was the number one recruit in the country? Okay. Mm-hmm. He's the new quarterback, the freshman quarterback at Michigan. Do you think him coming out and playing well in a spring game is going to make somebody else go, huh, hey, this Bryce Underwood, he's pretty good? No, I don't think so. And if you have someone under the radar excel, there's like a running joke we have at Penn State around the spring game is predict the MVP of the game. And the landslide prediction is always the fifth string walk-on running back, okay?
Right.
Because they get the carries, and but I hardly think that anyone's going to start changing their mind about that fifth string walk-on running back because of the scrimmage. And the other things that, just as a counterpoint, you talked about, you know, like wear and tear on some players, and I get it, especially the players from playoff teams, Ohio State, mm-hmm. Penn State. They played a lot of games. Well, my take on that is, Dustin, I don't think spring practice is really for, you know, Nick Singleton. He's got his reps in. Yes, you know, there'll be practices, non-contact. But I want to know, after Nick Singleton and Catron Allen graduate this year, there's the third and fourth string running backs, and coaches also talk about, gee, we're limited, we only get 15 practices. Well, guess what? Here's a chance for you to find out about your freshmen and redshirt freshmen. Let them play in front of a crowd in the big stadium and get some reps there. So I even get upset that James Franklin said, well, we'll probably shorten the game a bit this year. James, you've been shortening the game for years with a running clock and shorter periods. If these reps are so valuable, why do you keep shortening this game? I don't get it, Dustin.
Yeah, I think that that's probably – so I think the way that you just described it, a lot of coaches would probably say, we don't want to have a wasted practice. Because if I'm going to have a bunch of guys like Nick Singleton doesn't need to practice probably. Correct. Right. Like, you know, but there are some guys who, and maybe they're not fourth or fifth, but there might be a new starting offensive lineman who needs some work, but you don't want to risk him playing in the spring game. So I think some guys are switching to let's get more reps in on drill work. How can we improve footwork? How can we improve pass blocking? Different things like that. And to some degree, like playing a scrimmage or playing an actual game is how you get better at that. In other areas, but if you don't want that guy to play 80 reps, I don't know. I think there's just different aspects of it. I don't know what the driving force is behind it anymore, but I think that a lot of coaches now, with the limited amount of time you can have, they're just working more towards drill work. So like I said, I know from what I understand, Purdue is going to do a, and I keep throwing this out just because I cover them. So don't, I'm not just picking like a team that finished last for no reason. but basically it was like, we're going to have some drill elements. We're going to have, but we also want to see how our team performs, you know, under, for lack of a better phrase, under the bright lights, you know, in the big stadium with, you know, a couple thousand people on hand. We want to see how they perform. So it's going to be a kind of a split situation. And I think that's probably, maybe if you don't want to have a full spring game, maybe that's the best answer, is to have a little bit of drill work, have some of those drills and practice elements and stuff, but also be able to give your fans something where they play maybe two quarters or something, give them, you know, live football action. And what, like, the other funny thing to me is, like, Matt Rhule gets a lot of beat or flack for this, but Iowa hasn't done a spring game in God knows how long. Michigan State really never did a spring. I don't know about really never, but like Mel Tucker, I don't think Mark D'Antonio did a spring game. So there's been other programs that have been reluctant to do spring games anyway, but because he went public and said, we aren't going to do it, that's apparently he's the first to ever say we're not doing it.
Well, you make a valid point that there are teams that don't do it, but I think there are places where football is really important. I mean, if the weather's nice, Penn State will get like 70,000 people for this. And, you know, I know this gets forgotten, but it's the fans who are financing everything.
Right, that's okay. Correct.
You know, Matt Rhule, that millions of dollars you make per year, it comes from somewhere. And, we're not asking them, we're not throwing them in with the Lions back in the Roman Coliseum. They're playing a football game, which, by the way, in NCAA football, you keep voting to make it the season longer and longer. You know, you put these guys out there for 16 full games. Now in the spring, we're not asking you to do that with your starters, but your third and fourth string guys, who out of those 15 practices that you get, I'm sure you're doing some actual tackling and blocking and some actual contact. How about doing that in front of your fans and giving them a little something, just a little something? So I don't think it's asking too much. Now, to add to all this is Colorado and Syracuse, I thought, had this wonderful solution, which is to practice together. And the NCAA said, no. Why? You know, if you read the ruling, it's absolute ridiculous. You know what? Some time away from the academics, Dustin. Really? Really? Yeah. After you expand the playoffs to 12 teams and now going to be even more, now you're worried about the academics? And then it's like, well, other teams won't get the chance to do it this year. Well, that's too bad for them. They didn't, you know, think of the idea. I just wanted to get your take on that idea, which I love, yeah, by the way.
I think it's not a bad idea. I'm okay with the idea of it. I'm not going to give either one of those teams credit because they knew that the NCAA was going to say no. Like they can cry all they want about this, but they went into that fully knowing the NCAA was going to say no, but they get to be the martyrs on this topic. So, like, to me, like, the NCAA was never going to approve that. They knew that. And if push came to shove, those two teams were not going to – if the NCAA said, okay, you guys can do it, somebody would come up with a conflict or they would come up – like, they weren't going to – they were never going to do that. Now, if it had been Colorado and, say, Northern Colorado, the FCS team that's in town, then maybe I could see it. There was no chance a team was going to fly cross-country in the middle of spring to play a meaningless football game. Zero chance. So I'm not going to give either of those guys credit.
Well, I'll give them at least credit for throwing it out there. But you mentioning, you know, some FCS school in Colorado, I've actually said for years that that's the kind of thing they should do for a spring practice. I'll use Penn State as the example. Why not bring Villanova or Delaware in,
right,
in the spring? You do not have to play Drew Aller or Katron Allen or Nick Singleton. Gee, Jim, what if I actually lose the game? Who cares? It's all of your backups. But you're giving those backups real experience in a game atmosphere, which I think could be valuable. If the scrimmage becomes a lot more interesting just because there's a team with a different colored jersey. And I just feel like the NCAA will say no to anything.
Well, it's because that's the only thing they have left in governing college football, really. I am not opposed to this idea. I should make that clear. Like, if teams want to do that, then they should be allowed to do that. And I think an FCS or even a mid-major or a group of five school, if they want to do it, I think that should be allowed. I just have a hard time. Like, Deion Sanders knew what he was doing. He knew that there was no chance that was going to work out in his favor with another FBS team. So I'm in favor of the idea. I'm reluctant to give credit because from me, my standpoint, they knew that was never going to be. And like Syracuse isn't flying to Colorado. Colorado sure as hell is not flying to New York. So.
Well, I like the fact that they at least put it out there. And even if it just translates into people, knuckleheads like me, saying, hey, why not? Maybe someday we'll actually see it, Dustin. All right, that's it for quarter number two. A lot of Big Ten questions I have coming up for Dustin when we get back.
Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing. Built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. It's quarter number three of our show. So, Dustin, we got through basketball. We got through all this spring football noise going on. I thought it might be fun, at least for the rest of the show. You are the Big Ten sports writer. How about I ask you some Big Ten questions? What do you think?
All right, let's give it a shot. Let's see how it goes.
I know it's a crazy idea, but let's follow this path and see what happens. I just put together in my mind just some random Big Ten overall questions and just wanted to get your take on it. And this is always a fun question. This is the stuff that comes up every year. Big Ten, you got what it 18 coaches now. Who's on the hot seat as far as coaches go?
Yeah, that is a good question. I would think right now probably Luke Fickell is in that category. I think when he came in, having come from Cincinnati and having so much success leading them to the college football playoff, I think a lot of people thought he was going to come in and immediately – Wisconsin was always a really solid program and elevate them into college football playoff contendership. They have fallen way short of those expectations in the first two seasons. And with Tanner Mordecai at quarterback and then Tyler Van Dyke at quarterback, it really never worked out. Now, I know they dealt with some injuries, obviously, in those past two seasons. So that was a big factor there. But I think I'm not saying he's going to be necessarily fired this season, but if they don't get to a bowl game, I don't know where you go if you're Wisconsin. And this is to my overall point, Jim, like, maybe you shouldn't have fired Paul Christ. Maybe that was a really dumb idea. I think you threw out a name that I thought was interesting, too, was Lincoln Riley, because he was really good his first year. I think you can say that they underperformed in his second season with Caleb Williams coming back. A lot of people thought that that was a team that back then could compete in the for the Pac-12 and potentially sneak into maybe the college football playoff or at least a much higher bowl game. But that didn't work out that way. And then this past season, they were in some close games. They fought, but they could not squeak out some of those wins. And they had a big win to open the year against LSU, and that kind of raised the bar immediately. Like, oh, this is going to be a force of nature. So I think that those two are probably the biggest names in terms of the hot seat. I'm not sure about – I'm going to throw out another name that you mentioned too, was Michael Oxley. I don't know. That's a tough one because they took a step back, and I think we've had this discussion too where I think Mike Loxley's a pretty solid coach. I think you give a lot of credit to Taulia Tungavailoa, who was really good with them. So that's going to be interesting. I think that they – I don't think he's in jeopardy of losing his job this season, but it is interesting with Damon Evans going to SMU, their athletic director. We all know the situation with ADs, right? Like a new one comes in and suddenly there's a little bit of job security concerns. So I don't know. Maryland's one of those places to me where if you can win, you know, 6 to 8 games a year and you can have a really big year once every 5, 6 seasons, you're probably in good shape because who else are you going to bring in? Now, I know there's a lot of talent in that area, but we'll see. Those are the three names that I think are fair. I also don't know what's going to happen at UCLA with Deshaun. I think actually last year, thrown into the fire, Deshaun Foster did a really good job. I don't know what else he was supposed to do on short notice, but we'll see how that translates in year number two. So that would be maybe a guy I would throw out there that I think did a good job last year, but I don't know if he is going to be the long-term solution for UCLA.
Well, at UCLA, I think that they were starting from such a low point that I think they have to be patient there.
Sure.
You know, like Wisconsin, I think Wisconsin suffers from that envy. You know, it's always better on the other side of the fence, and you keep bringing in another coach. And we found out so many times. We saw that in Nebraska with Scott Frost. And it makes it so imperative to get the right guy. Now, you mentioned Loxley. I'm not a big Loxley fan. That's true. I am not. And I think part of it is something you mentioned. It is such a great recruiting area. Penn State gets fat in that area. They really do. And if you're the home team there, you should have an advantage. They don't seem to take advantage of that. And Lincoln Riley, boy, talk about every advantage. He's got the name value, okay, that could draw people. He's got the recruiting area, got the high-profile USC job. Boy, did that not seem like a slam dunk when they hired him?
It did. And I thought he was going to be very successful out there considering his offensive genius, and especially Jim when they were in the Pac-12. Like I thought that he would, and he did in his first season, but then they've kind of dropped off, and a lot of that was because they just couldn't play defense. Now they got a lot better, I think, defensively last season, but they just still don't play complementary football, and so that's something that's going to have to be addressed this offseason. They're going to have to be good on both sides of the ball, because as they've learned, if you're not, you're not going to win at a high level in the Big Ten. You might win some games here or there. You might pull off an upset, but you're not going to get to 10 wins unless you can be efficient on both sides of the football there. So part of this, too, is I've always wondered about this, Jim, and I don't know how true it is. This is just me kind of spinning my wheels a little bit. When you're at a place like a USC, I also wonder how much leash the staff is given in terms of their recruiting philosophy. Do the big time donors say, you know what, we're making X, Y, and Z donation. We need you to go after these 10 players now, and you need to try really hard to get them. How much of a restraint are they put on with recruiting? I feel like sometimes that happens. I don't know that that is the case, but it just seems like if I'm donating a lot of money, like USC doesn't want, I just don't think that that's a fan base that's going to be happy or excited by a bunch of 3 or low 4-star guys. They want to have the 5 stars. They got to have the best of the best, whether or not those guys fit in the culture, fit in the locker room. I just always think that that's a factor. And because Lincoln Riley was immensely successful at Oklahoma in the Big 12, throwing the football around, he probably had less intervention from some of those boosters, even though I know football is huge in Oklahoma and huge in that state, huge in that region. But I just wonder with USC, if that's kind of hindering him a little bit. I don't know. That's just me projecting.
Well, I think if even with interference from the donors, I would think there's still you're in Southern California. You can't spit without hitting a highly regarded recruit, okay? They're everywhere. And it's not like, look, here's a five-star. That's probably a guy you want to go after. And there's so many four-stars around, so many stars that I almost feel like USC could, and Lincoln Riley, I just assumed we would just get 24 four-star guys in each recruiting class, and you haven't even left Southern California. So the fact that there's so many recruits consolidated in a close area, it makes you more efficient with recruiting. You don't have to fly the length of the country. You get in your car, and you could hit so many of these guys. And again, it's Lincoln Riley, it's USC. And the one last note I'd like to make about them is, you mentioned last year, they lost multiple close games. I had a was it Wisconsin they lost to early? But they lost a game on the road early, and I'm not sure if Michigan. It was Wisconsin. Was it Michigan? And it was a close game. Then Penn State goes out there. USC had a couple touchdown lead, lost in overtime, another close game, and all of a sudden their season fell apart. And my point being, they were this close, you know, in those couple losses, that I think that changes how the rest of your season plays out. So I'll also say there's a bit of, you know, being unlucky that goes on there also. So let's move on. My next question for you. It took us three quarters of a segment to get through the first question. Let's see how we do after that. How about this one, Dustin? Who's this year's Indiana?
So I've been high on this team, and I don't know if it fits the qualification, because if you're asking a team that's going to go from really bad to really good in 1 year, I don't know if I have an answer. There's not necessarily a team I really like in that category. However, if you ask me that question in terms of which team is going to be this year's Indiana from a standpoint of what's a team that usually isn't in the college football playoff or Big Ten race that will be this year, is Illinois. They won 10 games a season ago. They return a lot of their talent. I'm really high. I think still, people will probably fight me on this. I still think Luke Altmyer is the best quarterback in the Big Ten. That doesn't mean he's going to throw for 5,000 yards and 100 touchdowns, but I think he's a really good, I think he's more than a game manager. I think he knows how to use his legs. So I think, to me, Illinois is the team I put in that category. Now, again, like you could pick a team like Michigan State that didn't have a good year. You could say Purdue could have a turnaround. Some of these teams that didn't perform particularly well. I just don't know that anybody's going to have that type of year where they went from what was Indiana in 2023, where they four or five wins. I think they had four wins and turned it into a playoff contender. I don't know that anybody has that same projection this year. But I do think that in terms of like a team that's under the radar, that not a lot of teams on the national, or not a lot of the analysts are going to talk about on the national scale, I think Illinois fits that category really, really well. Not just because of what they've got returning, but Jim, you look at their schedule and it's about as favorable as you can ask for, especially, I mean, the non-conference, you look at that, that should be three wins. They of the power teams in the conference, they only play Ohio State, and I'm not including USC on that mix because USC was subpar last year. So I think Illinois is a team that I will not be shocked if they're in the 12-team playoff next year.
That's a good take. And it also points out, Dustin, how much effect the schedule has on this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
You know, you and I know we did this exercise last year, and I always look at the schedules before the season starts. I identify the elite of the team of the conference and see, okay, for example, how many of those teams does Illinois play? And you pointed it out, they play Ohio State. By the way, they get them at home. They don't play Penn State. They don't play Oregon. They don't play Michigan, who I think will, you know, be an improved team this year. So I think Illinois is a pretty good pretty good call there. All right, we need to take a break. Right after the break, We'll try to get to more than two questions in quarter number four, Dustin. That's our goal. I think we can do it.
Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. Dustin, I have about a dozen questions or so here. And in quarter number three, we got through two of them. My goal is to get to at least three in this one.
We'll do our best.
Let's do it. So which Big Ten teams are going to make the playoffs this year?
Oh, yeah, you would ask that. Ah, damn it, Jim.
That's what I'm here for, Dustin.
Threw me a real curveball.
On the spot.
Threw me a real curveball. I feel comfortable saying Ohio State and Oregon. This is also based on, kind of the benefit of the doubt. Until you watch them in spring, until you know what their full roster is going to look like, even then, I feel confident saying Ohio State and Oregon. I feel really confident throwing Penn State in that mix. I think those three teams will be back in the playoff. I'm going to sneak Illinois in there. I'm going to sneak Illinois. I think the Big Ten gets four teams in there again, because even to me, Jim, this is the same situation. Now, the one thing that could hurt Illinois is all the regurgitation we heard from ESPN regarding Indiana last season. Yes. And their schedule. You could go through a situation where Illinois goes 11-1, and it's the exact same situation. Their only losses to Ohio State. The only difference would be they would have beaten one Power 5 team or Power 4 team, excuse me, in the non-conference because they'll play Duke, which, is that a Power 4 team? But I think Illinois is going to sneak in there. That's going to be – so I think four teams and Illinois is going to be your fourth this year. That's my bold take 6 months – or no, 5 months out.
Well, let me give you a bold take on that with Illinois. See, I think Illinois is who we expect this year to be the Indiana of this year. I think they have Ohio State, obviously. I know they have them at home, but I think that's a loss there. There's just enough of those where they play Indiana on the road. They've got USC, who I think will be better. They've got Wisconsin on the road. That could be a tough one. They've got Washington on the road. I think they'll trip up somewhere there. But I also, and I got to give you the quick backstory on this. Former Penn State defensive coordinator Manny Diaz is the Duke head coach, okay?
Yep.
I am a Manny Diaz fanboy, okay?
I do know that.
I get hell from several listeners who, the obligatory Manny Diaz message. And right now our listeners, they're starting to type already their message to me after hearing me bring it up. But – Illinois has to play Duke at Duke on the road. I'm predicting the upset right now. Manny Diaz and Duke over Illinois in a non-conference game.
All right, you heard it here first.
My prediction, I don't know who's going to sneak up. Will Wisconsin, will Nebraska, will Michigan? I could see Michigan, sneaking up
pick.
And being that fourth team, but I wouldn't be shocked, though, if we just get three Big Ten teams and we get like 17 Southeast Conference teams in the tournament.
we could see a full redemption this year.
Exactly. All right. How about this? Which quarterback situation intrigues you? And I'm going to start out because I just really always bring this up. I think the Ohio State quarterback situation fascinates the heck out of me.
Really?
Yes. I think they always have multiple top guys. And last year, or going into this year, I put the over-under at 2.5 at the number of quarterbacks to transfer. So far, two have gone out. I think I'll get my third one this spring once figures out third string in this group.
So I don't know. Maybe the Ohio State quarterback situation doesn't interest me as much because I just assume that the Ohio State quarterback is going to be really good.
That's a pretty good assumption.
I'm intrigued to see. And so it's not, these aren't necessarily battles. Now, I think like at Michigan State, what will Aiden Childs look like? Like there was a lot of hype around him at Oregon State and then his first year at Michigan State, and he was a turnover machine. He wasn't quite what they needed at that position, but now another full year as a starter. What does he look like? What kind of projections does he make? Bryce Underwood at Michigan. I think that's going to be an interesting to kind of follow him. How does he handle the bright lights of playing in the Big Ten on the big stage? And by the way, they've got a pretty tough game there in that second week where they'll play Oklahoma. So he's going to be, it's not like Oklahoma's Alabama or Georgia. But
it's still Oklahoma.
It's still Oklahoma, right? So there's an intimidation factor there. I think the Indiana situation, you know, Curtis Rourke on his way out and
Fernando Mendoza.
I always miss his name up, Jim. Darn it. I think that's going to be an interesting one. I wanted to throw this in there just for you, Jim.
Go ahead.
Because I'm intrigued to see the offense can't get worse, right? Like, what does Iowa do? I had to throw that in. There's my counter to your Manny Diaz mention.
Iowa's offense is like the counterpoint to Manny Diaz on defense. They are awful. It's just, how do they go this many years having such a good defense and just so bad on offense? But the other one you mentioned, Mendoza, going to Indiana, I'm intrigued by Indiana. You know, how real was last year? And yeah. I think the ability to identify Curtis Rourke as the guy to bring in and lead that offense, I don't think Mendoza, you look at his numbers, I know it's Cal, it's West Coast, not a great program. But he still put up some pretty nice numbers, and I am really intrigued to see what Indiana does this year, and specifically the quarterback situation.
Yeah, and if you look, their non-conference is still garbage. So we're not going to learn anything about this team through the first 3 weeks. But then in week four, they open up Big Ten play against Illinois, which I've already talked about how high I am on Illinois. Then they have to play a road game against Iowa at Kinnick Stadium. Then they get a bye week. Then they have to play at Oregon. Then they'll have a few weeks later, they'll play at Penn State. So this is a team that I don't think they can still be very good, but I don't think they're going to be 11-1.
What's your season prediction for them? Didn't expect that, did you?
No, I did not. I'm going to say off the cuff, I'm going to say 9-3. Which is still a really good season, but I don't think they're not going to the playoff.
No, I'm going 8-4 because I see some, you know, Oregon and Penn State on the road as losses. Mm-hmm. I think Illinois got a potential loss. I think at Iowa is a tough place to play. That's another potential loss. And I think even Wisconsin at home, you know, that could be a tough one for them. Let me ask this question. Ohio State and Oregon, who you have both of them in the playoffs, which seems like a solid prediction, but they're both – they don't rebuild. They reload.
Correct. Who's
in better position between those two programs?
Oh, man. This is probably just because I've covered Ohio State more, but I'm going to say Ohio State. I don't know. It's just Oregon, they were so good last year, and they laid such a dud in the Rose Bowl. And that's not like – I think they're still going to be really good. But I think Ohio State in terms of just their ability to reload their – Ryan Day's ability, if Ryan Day will throw the football against Michigan, and not just be so reluctant, they should be in pretty good shape. And I think their schedules are pretty similar. Like Ohio State will play Penn State, Oregon will play Penn State. Like those teams got, sheesh. Both of those teams got relatively light schedules, Jim.
Yes, they do.
Can we agree on that?
Well, Ohio State, I give Ohio State credit. They have Texas non-conference.
That's true.
Within the conference, Penn State and Michigan for them. For Oregon, it's Penn State and
yeah, you're still searching, are you?
I am. I think Oregon has the easier schedule. But I'm with you. Ohio State, they are used to – this is standard operating standards for them. They just reload. You know, they have multiple, you know, elite quarterbacks to choose from. So I agree. Ohio State is the team that I think is in better position. All right, here's one for you, Dustin. You are allowed one game the entire to attend. What game is that going to be?
I think it's going to be Ohio State, Texas.
Ooh.
I mean, the only thing that I don't like about that is it's so early. If that was, I mean, that would be a hands down. There's so many of these games that I could see myself going to, like Ohio State, Texas is really intriguing. USC Notre Dame because it's USC Notre Dame. Ohio State Penn State because that always seems to be a really good football game. There are a couple on there that I could, but like I just wish if Ohio State Texas was week three,
yeah,
and they had a chance to work the rust off a little bit, then. But I think that's still going to be a really good football game. But that to me. Again, this is kind of off the cuff, but that to me is the game I want to see. Now, I think number two on my list, kind of depending how USC season plays out, I think USC Notre Dame could be really interesting too.
That can be if USC, you know, is as good as they're capable of being. Sure. And remember, they're going to play that right after playing Michigan, so that's going to be intriguing. I have, and this is from a Penn State perspective, so I'm intrigued by Penn State Oregon because we see Penn State Ohio State every year. We've never seen Oregon, and that's to me, and it's early in the year. I think that one's going to be intriguing also, and tell us a lot about both teams. All right, Dustin, I think we got more than two questions in there. Congratulations. All right. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.